Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Husky Fan Podcast. I've been a little under the weather this week, starting to feel a little bit better, but I couldn't let the listeners down. I couldn't let you down, JC. Because I know you've just been rearing to pod.
Oh, yeah. Rearing to pod. It's a lot of things to talk about that are so exciting and fun for Husky football right now. Let's just remind the listeners, though, that, you know, the reason this was all started was because of our boy Sarkisian back in the day, where we knew he wasn't the right guy for the job, and he was getting fluffed by the media, and of course old Grinny over at I don't even remember. Is it Dog Man? I don't even.
Something like that.
So here we are again. Here we are, full circle. Back again, looking at the program as a whole. We've been ripping the coaching staff all year. We haven't even gotten to the Beavs game. I've pretty much tried to have erased it from my mind. Anyway, here we are to talk about Husky football.
That's right. We haven't covered that. We didn't do a pod last week.
We did not. And, you know, there's some content to cover, obviously, as things have spilt over into the social media world.
I think I know what you're getting into.
Yeah, where, you know, we're getting into some territory that we haven't really dealt with much. I mean, there's been smatterings here and there, but we have some vocal parents in respect to their kids' future. And we have former UW individuals sharing their opinion as well with those people. So it's getting interesting, to say the least. What isn't interesting is this team and what lies ahead.
Beautiful segue.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, and I will say, I think the parent, there's been a little bit of talk from parents, and I think those parents have been very respectful, and most parents in general, like, they haven't been saying anything that's like disrespectful, and no. I haven't seen anyone, you know, outright blaming the coaches. I guess one parent, he kind of straddled the line a little bit, but I guess that's just my main point. Like, they've been respectful, and this is a new era that we're in, where guys, they don't have to stick it out. You know, they can transfer, and look, this is a really young roster, and, you know, mostly because of COVID. And the majority of those guys, they're Pete's recruits, which means they were sold on a Chris Peterson program. Jimmy Lake was tapped as a successor because he would continue that program, built for life, but he would inject more energy, more sizzle, as they say. And, you know, the recruits from 2020, you know, they all bought into that. They all signed up for that. They said, okay, yeah, we're disappointed Pete's leaving, but, you know, that's good. And, you know, here they are almost 2 years into it, and all indications are that the program is just a massive failure. There's just nothing that you can point to and say, you know, this is getting better, or we should have optimism for the next year. And that's just so in that respect, whatever happens, I mean, whether it's Jimmy Lake or whether it's a new coach, they're gonna have to recruit the guys that are already on the roster to make sure that they come back next year. And that's a scary proposition if Jimmy Lake is the one doing that, because we know that his recruiting prowess has not been good, to put it lightly.
To put it lightly, you know, I was talking with China Husky a little bit about this situation, and I, you know, I did mention Pete, and does he own any of this debacle? Because, you know, he did publicly support the transition to Lake, and, you know, China Husky made a point where he was saying, you know, I don't know if you should necessarily let the guy going out the door pick their successor. Are they going to pick a guy? Like, these guys are so egocentric. Are you going to pick a guy that's going to do better than you? I mean, subconsciously, maybe there were some things there. I mean, we've even discussed whether, you know, there was some riff internally just because of some of Lake's brashness and his bravado, which, you know, Peterson's not into that stuff. Now, I don't want to get too far down the weeds in that, you know, thought process, but it is odd that, you know, there didn't, when we've discussed it, there was literally no alternatives to Lake. Like, it was just like a foregone conclusion. Was there a search committee? What was Cohen, you know, picking up the phone, dialing around, seeing out if anyone else had interest in the job? I mean, from everything that you and I know, there was none of that. And, you know, obviously looking back, we could probably say we wish that Lake at this point did not take over the program. But to your point, like, we thought there were going to be some improvements around playing with greater emotion, maybe a little bit more with the times of college football and you know, relating to this new generation of young ilk in what's important to them in respect to playing big time college football. And, you know, we were hopeful that there would be some improvements in that area. And we did think that Lake was going to be that guy. And we thought recruiting was going to be more emphasized, and it hasn't been. Recruiting has suffered quite a bit. And, you know, there's still, you know, I think I will say, though, in regards to, like, mainstream media now, things are, they're starting to lay the heat on a bit. And, you know, Softy certainly hasn't been as guarded as he has been in the past. At least he's been calling it like he sees it. And he's been pretty, for the most part, he's been pretty overt about his thoughts of what's going on.
Yeah. And I wonder what he said during the Montana game that Christian Capel alluded to in a tweet. I think after the game, he alluded that Softy in the press box had some choice words that apparently he wasn't going to repeat publicly.
Hmm. And do we have any insight as to what that potentially, what was potentially said?
No. Christian hasn't elaborated on that. And shout out to Christian, by the way. I don't know if you saw it, Jimmy, but Christian Capel has a new pod with Danny O'Neill.
I have not seen it.
Yeah, they put out their first episode. It was pretty good, I think, for a mainstream pod. It was pretty good. I don't think, you know, Christian, obviously, he's a beat writer. He does a really good job, as does Mike Varell. Yeah. So Christian is not going to criticize the program the way that you or I would. And I think Danny O'Neill, I mean, I agree with him, but he's not on the, you know, this is a complete failure train yet, which is a little disappointing. But nevertheless, it's a good listen. You guys should listen. But getting back to, there's a couple things you touched on. The first thing, not to go off on a huge tangent, but well, actually, there's two things. You know, whoever gave Peterson that book, which led to him quitting,
yeah.
That guy, you know, is unfortunately is damaged Husky football significantly. And in that book, it's interesting. I guess a theme of the book, or one of the themes, someone told me, was people wanting too much credit. And, you know, Jimmy Lake, for a couple of years, we had to give him more money and placate him so he wouldn't leave. And I'm not saying that there was a rift between the two of them, but I think you intimated that potentially. So that's, you know, that's one thing to think about. The other thing is the decision, it's like in business and life, what people tell you is cut your losses. Like when things go wrong and you just let them drag on, like that's what kills you. It's not making, like, a bad hire only kills you if you just let it go and cause destruction.
Yes.
And so that's why the faster we clean this up, the better off we're going to be in the long run. I mean, you keep Jimmy around for another year with a new staff. It's just not, you know, what's the best thing that's going to happen if you say, okay, Jimmy, here's a great staff, you know, they're still going to lose a lot of guys. You know, maybe Sam Heward stays. Maybe we'll get back to a 7 or 8 win. You know, we'll hit that mark in 2 years or 3 years, or you know, maybe we'll have a little success like that. But I mean, that's, you know, that's not why we're here. That's not why we're doing this. You know, that's not what we should be going for in this program. And so that's just the concern. Like a real program, like look at LSU. They're right. They're going to fire Ed Orgeron because they know, look, the guy had a fantastic historic season in 2019, but it was a lightning in the bottle type thing. He's not a good, he can't be a consistent championship coach. It's quickly falling apart for them.
Right.
And they know that it's, you know, you got to go. And
we
so that
don't, we don't have confidence that Cohen is going to make a swift move.
Right. And it's just getting back to cutting your loss. The downside is if they try and improve or patch this thing together, that next year it could really fall apart even more than this year, because the similarities to 2003 are, you know, striking. And just recruiting, I don't think recruiting is going to get that much better. If you bring in two new coordinators, maybe you can keep, you know, maybe if we're lucky, we will keep, you know, Odunze and McMillan. You know, maybe the recruiting will be okay, but it's just, that's not, you know, the recruits have already, they don't believe in anything that Jimmy Lake is selling from day one. I mean, that was that's been ominous. That was the initial warning sign. Sure, recruiting was going to dip a little bit when you lost Coach Pete, or more than a little bit, but he's just, you know, guys, he can't keep guys committed when they commit, and there's just, that's not going to get any better. And that's why you have to nip this thing in the bud after this year.
I mean, what do we see after the bye week? Do we see a wholesale change in the defensive philosophy that we've seen? Do we see an adjustment with the offense? Like if you say like they're going to do the patchwork, right? It's clear that to me, it's clear that obviously Donovan needs to go. I think Huff has had his chance to put together. I mean, like we've been over it 100 times. Like this offensive line should be the best in the Pac-12. Like no question, not even close. Based on, you know, the recruiting or, you know, the talent that these guys were all projected to be. You know, they just haven't put it together. They haven't been a solid O-line. They should be road grading this piss conference. Frankly, I mean, is there any defense in the Pac-12 that really scares you or just concerns you on a week-to-week basis? Truly? Like, there's no great defense.
Yeah, I'm looking at the stats. Like, none of these defense – I mean, Oregon's on paper should be much better than what it is. Arizona State has the best defense. You know, ours is statistically we're after Arizona State. But I mean, you know, Utah has a few good players and they're sound, but they're not elite. I mean, we scored what last year 24 points and a half to beat them. So you know, and they don't have like any new guys that are that special. But that's you're absolutely right. And that's, and to go back to last year, I mean, it's just baffling how the offense wasn't that great last year. I know we played at home, we played an easy schedule, but the offensive line and Dylan Morris and the running backs are all so much worse than they were, even compared to last year. That is just baffling.
Yeah, I mean, like, what, you know, you have to wonder, like, what the vision, what they're, you know, coaching these guys up in regards to, from a mental perspective. You know, what are they doing at practice where they're actually going the other direction? You know, like, and that's to your point, which you've discussed ad nauseum, that if there is a toxicity, there's a rot that just permeates within the entire program. And that's going to impact all facets of the team, how you practice, how you train, you know, your commitment to the game and film. You know, are you a film room junkie? You know, are you taking the boxing classes with Jake Locker in the summer? Where is the commitment level, the desire in this program? Because, you know, right? I mean, there's a huge cloud over the program in respects to, you know, Jimmy's handling of the program so far. It's just all around, you know, it's an ugly situation and it sucks. Like, we would love to be more positive and be more optimistic and point to signs that this thing is going to get turned around. But, you know, you watch the Oregon State game and, you know, you lose. And there, what real positives do you have to have your, you know, hang your hat on? It's more of the same. They got out-coached. We know that Washington has more talent than Cal and Oregon State does combined. If you look at blue chip recruits, you know, we take Cal into overtime and, you know, we caused the fumble at the end, the Oregon State game. We know what happened there. I mean, they just flat out got beat, and they have twice or three times the resources of both of those programs. And they got all coached.
And what was demoralizing about the Oregon State game was we Sean McGrew, you know, we start running the ball really well. Sean McGrew scores a touchdown. I mean, I think earlier on that drive, Kamari Pleasant caught a pass, a screen pass or dump off on 3rd and 18, and he somehow got the first down. And then I think
broke that tackle.
Was that the same drive? Sean McGrew has a long touchdown run, the first run for over 20 yards. And then I don't know if it was one or two plays later, Fatui Tele just beasts the quarterback and causes a fumble. Sam Taimani picks it up, almost runs it in. So we score a touchdown. We're up by 7. I don't know how much time's left. What, 7 minutes or 8 minutes or something like that. And Oregon State, then they go down the field and they easily score. I mean, that's demoralizing how we have control of the game. And when it's time to win the game, Oregon State just made every play from that point. You know, and we were back to being a shitty team. That's what was really demoralizing. And for one positive, I mean, the defensive line is starting to play better. And that's, you know, that's, I feel terrible for all the players.
Well, I was just going to mention briefly that, just to clarify, their first 20-yard run of the season, not just the game. But
oh, yeah, I'm sorry. It was a wildcat, so we haven't had one out of center.
Yeah.
Right? Right. Under center or in a normal formation. But yeah, that's the positive thing that I could pick up from that game, so we're not negative on everything, is the defensive line is they're starting to play better. And, you know, it's not, and look, linebacker is a weakness. You know, other than Eddie, we just have a bunch of Jags. So, you know, that's going to hurt. That's going to hurt the perception of the D line, but they're playing better and better.
Well, it's not good enough.
Well, I mean, it's not good enough because the rest of the defense is, they're going to continue to get better. But, you know, when you have a hole at linebacker and when you're playing your safeties way far back, and I mean, we have seen some good plays out of the safeties here and there, but
sure. But what if you have the, you know, you have the coveted DBU title right now? Guys want to come here because, you know, we've put so many guys in the league.
Well, they don't. They don't want to come here. If you look at how recruiting's been going.
Right. Correct. But I'm saying, like, that is such an emphasis for Jimmy, right? In the past, where, you know, they've been. The point I'm getting at is that, you know, why is he playing the safety so far off the ball when we have, you know, allegedly great corners, and you haven't been very effective against the run. You're literally just taking a guy away to make a play on the back, right? Unless they break a long run there. Is he a safety valve? Like, that's the other thing. Like, the quarterback, Nolan, wasn't threatening at all from throwing the, you know, passing the ball at all. Same with Michigan. He threw for 43 yards. They're literally just taking a guy out of the defense and putting him 25 yards off the line. Why are you doing that?
Maybe I could be wrong, but I just get the sense that it's like part of Jimmy's ego and he wants to protect his DBs and his cornerbacks, because that's what he's known for.
Same, but it's possible. Nothing would surprise me. But if you're so confident in these guys' abilities, and we've seen, like, great plays out of, you know, Gordon's been making plays. We know McDuffie's a total stud. Like,
Bookie's played well. Hopefully they get him back. But, yeah, do you think they've gone to Jimmy and said, you know, coach, you have to trust us?
I have no clue. No idea. Maybe. Who knows, dude? It doesn't seem like that's the case in respect to what we're seeing on the field. But, you know, hopefully we see a complete change in how they're doing everything with 2 weeks off.
Well,
blows my mind they're favored against UCLA. I mean, I don't think they'd beat UCLA.
Yeah, before we get into that, you know, as far as a change, I mean, not firing Donovan, that is just ridiculous.
Well, that comes back to the demoralization and staying positive. Like, I think, like, we would feel really good about them moving on from Donovan over the bye week, right? I mean, that would make us feel better, at least for a short period of time.
Look, teams tend to get a fired coach bounce.
Yes.
They often do, because it's a sign that it's an acknowledgement that this is really bad, this is unacceptable, we have to do better. And naturally, the human instinct, if you're in some kind of a team or business or whatever, and you want to do well, naturally you're going to pick up your effort, your attitude, and your output immediately after that happens. Like, that's why we see a fired coach bounce.
Sure.
And I'm sure neither of us are surprised that it didn't happen, but I don't know what Jimmy's thought process is. Is he just saving the firing for the end of the season so he can save himself? It's just, okay. If someone, you're failing, he's also failing to read the room. Because Jalen McMillan retweeted one or two things about it. And it's like, you know, this hiring Donovan torpedoed our offensive recruiting. And it just, I don't understand, you know, what the hell he's thinking about.
Yeah, right. I mean, like, if you're sending John Donovan into recruiting right now, like, whatever you're saying in that room is the family and the player buying whatever he's saying? And why would you want to listen to him? Like, in your eyes, he's dead man walking. And you think if other programs aren't, you know, dialing in on the issues of Washington, that, you know, how much doubt you could create very easily, very quickly? I mean, you don't have to say much, right? You could just essentially, like, look at the statistics.
Yeah.
You know, like, here's where your kid would be playing, and this is what, you know, we're generating, you know, in this position group or whatever they break it down to, right? And, like, they could do compare. I mean, it's just, it's not hard to recruit against Washington right now. I mean, it's like shooting fish in a barrel.
Yeah. No, it's, yeah, it's a slam dunk recruiting against what? It's not even, we're not even able to, we're not even competing with Oregon or USC or Stanford anymore. For those, you know, we're recruiting with Wazoo and Arizona now, and Oregon State, I mean, basically.
How about Oregon State then losing to Washington State the next week? It's just like, oh my gosh, dude. And that Delora kid, I think he threw for like over 300 yards or 350 yards against Oregon State.
Yeah, I mean, Dylan Morris, this has to be terrible. I mean, this is terrible coaching. I mean, we know he's not a great quarterback, but he is so much worse than he was last year. And someone, I think someone on Dogman posted that they watched every play of the game for a second time, and that Morris was basically, he was only going to the first option.
Yes,
he cannot go through progressions anymore.
No, and he's not as mobile as he was. He doesn't seem to have the same moxie. We talked a lot about just him showing command of the offense and his moxie. It's like maybe he's not trusting what he's being told or coached. It's just it's baffling. I mean, to just watch the regression and the poor play and being outcoached by lesser programs. And then, you know, you take that tough loss against the Beavs, and the Beavs go out and they get beat by Rolovich and his, you know, group of subpar talent. I mean, that's just what it is. I'm just calling it as it is. Now you look at the Apple Cup, you're like, that's probably going to be a game. Probably it's going to be a game. I think it will be, right? I mean, we're not a very good team. Wazoo just got a little bump because they beat the Beavs. I mean, like, they're excited for, you know, winning that game, right? Like, there was talk around the Beavs being a contender now, 2-0, sole possession of the North until they lost to the mighty Cougs. That's bad. It's bad.
Yeah.
Like, do you feel confident in any game the rest of the way?
No, I don't. I mean, Arizona's worse than Montana, but that's like, I feel like if we lose to UCLA, then if we lose to Arizona, that could, the chances of Lake being fired really shoot up. Even though they're still like, we'd be 2-5. There's still 5 more games left. That's a game we should win just because the talent advantage is so overwhelming and Arizona's bad. I mean, they lost to Northern Arizona.
At worst, what level of talent and team do you think we have? Like, what's the worst? Like, let's say the season start, you know, before the season even began, like, in your mind, What was the worst case scenario in regards to wins losses for this team?
I would have thought like 7-5.
Right. Right. And now we're staring down a potential like 3 or 4 win season, which would be unfathomable to think about, right? With all the guys returning and that supposed talent the team has in total. It's hard to fathom how quickly the program has tailspinned into just disaster and us thinking about, you know, how far back is this program set from, you know, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years? You know, like we said, this has to be a swift decision to you know, essentially get the water out of the hole, right? Until this thing sinks.
Yes. It's been such a disaster already that it cannot be allowed to continue in any capacity.
And like,
trying to patch this thing together, it's just, and I mean, look, I'm thankful for everything that Jimmy Lake did for the program. You know, same thing with Gilby. Gilby, we, you know, you've covered it. Amazing coordinator on the national championship team. Amazing coordinator on the 2000 Rose Bowl. I mean, he was an amazing coordinator, but the guy was a fucking awful head. Even at Cal, he took over a Cal team.
Yeah.
Bruce Snyder built them up. I mean, the 91 Cal team, that was a really, really good, like the second best team they've ever had.
Yeah.
In modern football, the best team they had was 2004, the Aaron Rodgers, Marshawn Lynch. I mean, they should have beat USC. That team was number 2 in SRS, I think. But that 91 team that Gilby took over the year after, he tanked that program. Like, one of the years, they were favored to win the Pac-10, and he fucking tanked it. And he did the same thing when he was our coach, 2003, 2004. But to me, that doesn't take away all of his accomplishments. It's the same thing with Jimmy Lake. You know, great DB coach, DBU, death row. He did a great job as a DP coach, pretty good as a coordinator. Guy, he's a fucking terrible head coach, maybe even worse than Gilby at this point. But that doesn't – it's, we don't have to get emotional about it. Like, thanks for everything you did. Okay, time to go. You know, you're getting paid a shitload of money to be a head coach. Your buyout's fucking huge. I mean, as fans, we don't have to be emotional about this. Most head coaches are not going to be good or even great head coaches.
That's right.
That's just, I mean, look at Alabama. Like, they just got lucky with Saban. They had Gene Stallings too. I mean, they've had like, you know, one all-time great coach and one other decent coach, like in the last, I don't know, since like the mid 80s. Maybe I'm wrong, but you know, USC, like other than Pete Carroll, they've had terrible coaches for a long time. Like, most coaches, it's a really hard job. Like in the NFL, there's constant turnover. It's really hard. You're going in the majority of cases, you're going to be firing constantly. So most people are not good head coaches in college football or the NFL. So we don't have to get emotional about this or try and wait to see if, you know, Jimmy can get up to 6 or 7 or 8 wins maybe. There's no need for that.
It's as you'd said, they're always firing in this day and age of the game, right? There's no waiting or hoping that it's going to get turned around in a period of time. And like, you know, people speak about, you know, Beamer's career, you know, at Virginia. Or where do you, I mean, where do you, where'd
Beamer? Virginia Tech.
Yeah, Virginia Tech. In the sense where, you know, he had a rough start for a few years and then he like really turned the corner. Like that's not happening here.
So when people brought that up back in the Tyrone days, the 2000s, the Doug Wars of the 2000s, I'm sure somebody brought up Rich Brooks as well.
Oh, jeez.
The 18-year plan to lose a Rose Bowl.
Yeah, the 18-year plan to be good, right. Yeah. You know, look at Mike Price. I mean, he had a good stretch, Alabama, hard, and they got a hold. Oh, shit, we got to get rid of this guy quickly. And set him up and got his ass out of town.
But in this, the other thing, Jimmy, is in this day and age, tell me if I'm wrong, things happen faster. You know, there's social media, communication is instant. It's much unlike 15 or 20 or 30 years ago. So you can lose a team in an instant or lose a locker room in an instant.
Yeah.
Teams are going to, it's bad coaches. If you're a bad coach and you're going to lose the team, it's going to happen much faster in today's world compared to 15 or 20 years ago, where, you know, maybe you lose the team in 2 or 3 years.
I mean, that's, you know, lend that to another, you know, check the box for Pete in regards to getting out of the game, or, you know, you're managing cell phones in the locker room or in the team room. You're managing social media, monitoring what everyone's saying. Like, could you imagine McMillan, like, tweeting that out under Pete? Like, you know, and then just, like, knowing, like, how quickly these things can spiral. And then, you know, chatter and recruiting and probably the ugliness he dealt with that maybe he probably wasn't dealing with at Boise State. Just, I guess the point I'm making is that this day and age is, like you said, it's really hard to be a head coach. It's probably even way harder now, because of how these kids communicate and across the landscape, right? Like, these guys know recruits coming up. They know players at other programs. They're talking. Like, I could only imagine if the NCAA decided to comb through, you know, 3 million text messages of college football players. Could you imagine the shit they would dig up? Could you imagine? It would be like...
There's hundreds of John Grudens out there.
Oh, dude. You stole my thunder, and you're exactly right. Right? Like, think about... If people want to look under the hood or pull back the curtain and imagine the communication that's taking place among players and programs and coaches, like, my God, the country would probably instantly vaporize into ash. Like, you know what I mean? The point is that, like, but what coaches have to deal with now, we could only imagine. But, like, to your point, though, they're being paid a shit ton of money. And, you know, that's the reality of it. And if you don't want to deal with it, or you can't deal with it, like, you got
to
go.
Yeah, before Jimmy Lake wanted to be a football coach, he wanted to go into business to get rich.
Yes, that's right.
So he's not – it's like we don't owe him anything, okay? He's set for life. He's made a lot of money. How much was the salary the last couple of years before he became coach?
Well, I think it was pushing almost a mil, wasn't it?
Yeah, and you know that even if you only have that for a couple of years, I mean, he probably made 2-3 million just being an assistant. I mean, how many years is it? 6 years.
Yeah, seven. He was with Pete 7 years.
I'm just thinking, like, from 2016 to 2019, like, those 4 years when he was coordinator, he probably made $3 million, I would guess, over that period.
The worst salary was probably $300,000 or $400,000. I think he was never below $400,000.
Yeah. Either so way. Look, he's going to be completely well off. The fact that
he's going to get a great job, he gets fired, he's going to go get a coordinating job, make a shit ton of money. He coached in the NFL. I mean, the guy's done well.
Yeah, so we, it just, you, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the other point I was going to make was. My brain is, I've just been a little sick this week. You know, but I,
wrap this up.
Yeah, there's one other thing I wanted to, oh, the thing with communication, like that, and players talking, like that's a great point. And that's what's different compared to 15 years ago and 30 years ago, is that we have social media, everybody has a cell phone, the players know each other. It's much different than 20 or 30 years ago. You know, they go to all these camps and shit like that. So the players know each other. They're talking to each other. You know, remember a couple years ago, USC had a fucking terrible recruiting class. Do you, you know, you might, you think that was because some players were saying Clay Helton's a fucking idiot, you know, and they're, and you think there's probably at least, would you bet that at least one USC player told a recruit that?
Oh, you could count on it.
You think that happened when Mark Helfrich was at Oregon? I mean, their recruiting never like completely tanked, but it fell off.
If you have players, parents on social platforms communicating with Jordan Reffitt, who is now considered like a media guy, former Husky, and they're having a public conversation about the program, how many eyes are on that conversation? Like, I would love to see the analytics on just that thread alone with those guys and seeing how many eyeballs were on that discussion. And you don't think the players and, you know, prospective players didn't see that or aren't aware of it? Like, we know they are. Like, you know, if you're a parent of a recruit and Washington, you know, is recruiting you pretty hard, like, you're going to be asking blunt questions if you're, you know, a responsible parent for your kid's future. Like, and then, you know, there's been that argument. What did Keith Price come out and say, you know, go where you want to play. Don't play for the coaches, so to speak. Like, go to where you want to go for college. He alluded to something of that nature, right? Like, because these coaches will burn you, or they'll move on, or go for a better job, or whatever. Like, they're going to tell you a bunch of bullshit. So, you know, there's probably got to be an element of that, right, where, you know, you have to understand that whoever's selling you a line of shit, you know, they could be out the next week. Like, you know, there is some of that. Like, you have to be conscious.
I mean, it's
of that,
only
right?
going
that
to get worse.
This guy at any time could be gone.
And
your
so,
position
that, I mean,
coach,
these are
think
like
of the
you can't
carousel position.
You
coach.
Can't fix or change
you know?
That. You know, Jimmy Lake like doesn't have
a
track record
to get a
as a head
I mean,
coach.
Kwiatkowski to
you
have
know,
that role
stop
for that many
there's
years
an article
as
today.
A coordinator like that's pretty rare.
I don't know by SI Washington or whatever it was trying to compare Jimmy Lake's first 9 games to, you know, the first 9 games for all these other Husky coaches. But I mean, Jimmy Lake's resume is so much thinner than all those other coaches. Like, trying to compare his first 9 games to Don James' first 9 games. I mean, come on. Don James at Kent State was like the fucking Oregon State of their division. And he had 2 really good seasons. You know, they won their division when he was coaching them. Like, a lot of Husky fans don't know that. So it's when you have a track record like it's the same thing with Peterson. You know, people are bitching about him in 2014 and 2015, but that's a guy who has a track record and he's earned the right to turn it around. You know, he's earned the right to coach for a long period of time. You know, Jimmy Lake, no fucking track record as a head coach. And just like I said, hires John Donovan. Torpedoed recruiting, lose to fucking Montana when a lot of people predicted your team to win the conference. And the worst to me is Bob Gregory. We've talked about this before. I think that was actually worse than Donovan. And the GAs, like the guy, Rip Rowan. Now, the players really like him a lot. Like, he when he got hired, like, Joe Tryon and other guys had made great comments about him. But when Bob Gregory got promoted to D coordinator, no player fucking tweeted on his behalf.
And
the other thing is, like, promoting those, like, if the head coach has a track record,
even as,
and
he's
promoting GAs, like, Clemson, I think, has done that a lot. You know, Peterson did that. Like, you trust their judgment. But when it's a guy who's new to coaching,
it
doesn't have
bad.
That much
You're
of
right.
a,
I mean, it's,
you know, a coaching tree.
It's neck and neck.
It's a thin staff. So, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, look, we like Jimmy a lot. He was on our podcast amazingly. I mean, I like, you know, as I had no problem with him as an assistant, as a DB coach. He gave us some great memories, just like Gilby. But, you know, sorry, man. We can't let you completely torpedo this program any further. It's the same thing with Gilby.
I mean,
like, when you saw Gilby on the sideline, like, he didn't look, he just looked like goofy.
We knew where we wanted
to
go.
He didn't look like he belonged. And I just get that same, Jimmy just doesn't look like he has the gravitas. I don't know if that word makes sense. Just when he's there on the sideline, it just doesn't, like, carry weight to me. It doesn't look convincing.
Remember how much energy he had on the sidelines as a coordinator, and now you watch him as the head coach and it's like emotionless. No, he did not. I mean,
yeah.
And kudos to the guys that are really successful in a coordinator position, you know, even like a big time OC or DC position, knowing, like, you know, where you excel and knowing, like, you know, limitations.
Like Kawasaki.
You just know you're not going to be a great head coach. I mean, the people that are super self-aware and understand where their limitations lie and maximize where they're going to be really strong, I mean, it's a pretty unique trait, especially.
Yeah, I think it'll be okay.
Work, right, where it's so ego driven, so competitive, and the desire to continue to grow and, you know, make more money or what have you.
Here's one question I have for you. Let's get into questions, and I'm going to ask you a question.
Niche,
I don't know.
Excel, right?
Do you think
you can have a really good career?
Okay, let me just go over a little bit of history for all
like
of the Duke fans
exactly.
out there.
Now,
so if you look at all-time win percentage in college football history,
Texas,
this goes back to 1869.
I'm sure it didn't.
Now,
help.
If you
I'm
cut
sure
that off in 1992,
well for shootout.
The end of Don James, we were number 11 in win percentage. If you cut that off 10 years later in 2002,
sure.
we were number
I mean,
12.
Nobody cares about defense
so,
anyways.
You know, there wasn't that much of a historical fall off even after Don James retired. Now, you go all the way to 2020, so 18 years later, we're number 18 now. So we've fallen from number 12 to number 18 in the last 18 years. Now, I know if you look at the early 1900s, you know, our win percentage is inflated. You know, we played high schools and whatever. It is a little inflated relative to some other schools. But if you're looking at our program, Jimmy, I think the demarcation of when the program changed is it's really 2001, 2002. You know, based on the stat that I just gave, the fall off going from 12th in win percentage to 18th. And at the same time, you know, changing the logo to the weasel and the uniforms, that was a complete fucking disaster. And So yeah, that was just some historical research I was doing. But with all that being said, because you can use some of this in your answer, I mean, do you think that, because this is one criticism some Husky fans have of people like us and Husky Twitter, like let's call it that. Do you think that we have an inflated view of the program and therefore our expectations are really too high, and that maybe we should accept that we're an upper mediocre program?
Oh, yeah. I think there's validity to that. I do have a few friends that like to point out and rib me on the fact that Husky fans are arrogant pricks for the most part and do have a, you know, a higher opinion of the program than they really should. You know, I was a diehard college football guy for many years, and I still love college football. I don't have the amount of time that I used to be able to pour into it. But you know, if you, I got every magazine every year, like preseason Lindy's, all that stuff. I followed recruiting and I'd always look, I remember always looking at like top players and position groups, like top safeties, top D line, top linebackers, tight ends. I mean, throughout the years, Washington always had, you know, good players that were coveted, that were viewed as good talent as when they were put against, you know, national players, right? You'd always, there was always Washington guys sprinkled in, and they'd always break down like the top 10 offensive lines, D lines, linebackers. I mean, through the years, Washington always had, you know, for the most part, well-regarded players at, you know, position wise and then position group wise, right? Like, especially like in the 90s, early 2000s, and then, you know, the Gilby kicked off the dark days. Washington was always in the conversation as a good program. They're always talked about nationally. I don't know that I guess where our expectations come from is that we saw the potential of the program. We know it's one of the most resourceful athletic programs. They're flush with cash. They have a booster base that is willing to shell out a shitload of money. So I think where a lot of our expectation lies is where the potential and what they have to offer as a program and the resources that are available right now. They have all the bells and whistles. They have, you know, the separate practice. You know, remember the arms race? They had the whole shit about, you know, this was like 10 years ago, about Oregon and Washington starting an arms race of, you know, who can build more shit for the program and have the separate indoor facility and the weight rooms. And, you know, people like, does this make sense for, you know, should we be doing this in society? And it's like, all of the pieces that are at Washington put together properly, you should be in the conversation as a top 10 program every single year. And there's been stretches where this program has been in that scenario with, you know, most namely Don James. And like to the point of, you know, coaches, like there's only so many good coaches out there. You know, you turn the page until you find that next great coach. And the right coach in this program should be really successful. So our expectation, if you know, the criticism of us is that we have an inflated view of the program, is that this program you know, for a good stretch of time was, you know, really well regarded nationally and put out really good football teams and were dominant at home for many, many years. And so, you know, people like to rib Husky fans because we do have this high expectation, and it's easy for someone from the outside to say, well, your program's a mediocre and average. Like, what have you done? You're shit. Like, you had a few good years, blah, blah, blah. But if someone's really, like, aware of college football, like, Washington had a lot of good stretches in the history of college football. And so it's, like, when you look at the historical perspective, you look at what the team's accomplished, right? Okay, there's arguments about how many national titles they won. Did they split a national title? All that bullshit. The point being is that this program has all of the pieces to be a dominant college football program nationally. And there's no reason it shouldn't be. You know, and
yeah, I agree. And I just, like, I think things the stewardship of the program
too is like the Pac-12 conference is not,
is my issue. Well. I think that's what people who make that criticism,
the league itself, you know, the teams criticizing us for mediocre when you look at the
saying
rest
we
the
want better outcomes, but, which I mean, which is true. We want better results, but at the same time, the stewardship of the program and the process, investing in the program, like Sub K talked about, like all those things, like we just don't, we don't do that anymore. Like that, and everyone knows that. You know, we don't
year out really freaking good.
You know, we want, like, the university wants to be good at football, but it doesn't want to be great. It doesn't want to do the things that can help us be great. You know, it more often than not. And I think that's what bothers me, is you just look at, you know, the athletic department, I mean, how someone like Jen Cohen, it's like a multi-million-dollar business. Like, what's the revenue the department does, like 80 million or something, or, you know, so I don't, someone out there, Coker, they probably have the figures. You know, Tequila, they know much more than I. But in the private sector, could Jen Cohen ever come close to touching a company that did that kind of revenue? Like, fuck no. She wouldn't even be middle management. You know, she would be lower than that. And it's, you know, and it's nothing against her personally. It's she's making $800,000. You know, that's a year where you get to be criticized. You know, when you make a lot of money, you know, you have a business, or, you know, you have a job and you have to serve people, they have the right to criticize you, you know, within reason. You know, she's in a public job. She makes a shit ton of money. She's extremely underqualified and she has no idea what the hell she's doing. And even, you know, someone on Twitter told me that Softy even said that Jen Cohen was asking him to help her hit up businesses for NIL. Like, could you imagine any other athletic director
just the truth
saying that publicly? Like, you're just admitting you're a fool and you have no idea. And it's just, it's almost like not surprising to a degree. Yeah, and just, you know, people say, "Oh, well, just, you know, we care about football," or, you know, you know, the AD is not that important.
I don't even know.
An example is if you just look at the last 20 years. You know, we fired, you know, Neuheisel shouldn't have been fired. You know, we fired him for the gambling, the alleged gambling, which later won that case in court. So it turns out we were wrong.
It doesn't matter.
Gilby should have been an interim coach. He should have been fired after the first year. You know, Tyrone never should have been hired. Should have been fired 2006, the suddenly senior thing. He lost the team. 2007, you know, we fired him, caved to political pressure. The firing didn't go through.
There's no signs that it's going
to
change.
So, there just, you know, that's just an example. Like, a real program would not have made just a host of, or just a copious amount of errors, like, repeatedly. You know, Oregon, what did they do with Helfrich? They didn't keep him around. You know, they didn't need to keep him around. I mean, 2015, if his quarterback is healthy, he probably could have told them in 2016, you know, look, if Vernon Adams was healthy, we would have made the playoff. You know, you're gonna fire me just because I've had one bad season. But they knew, they saw what was going on, and they said, this is a failure. This is not, you know, we want to win. He's out of there. They hire Taggart. He leaves. Okay, you know, there's turnover. They you know, Cristobal, they promote him. It looks like a right. shitty hire, a questionable hire. But, you know, he's done well so far. But you know what? If Cristobal, if he trails off, and if he's already peaked and he trails off, you know, and he doesn't do well with his five-star recruits in the next couple of years, they'll fire him and get somebody else. They're not going to keep him around for 10 years. Because they're a serious program. Like, how you manage the program, these things, they matter. And yes, we do have some, you know, we do have some recruiting limitations. You know, the state of Washington is not Florida, Texas, or Southern California. But, I mean, look at all the talent that, I mean, dominating Washington and just getting guys from other places, Utah, California, Arizona, that can get you classes and talent that'll help you compete nationally. I mean, if we, you know, we could have had, going into the 2023 season, like, we could have had a roster of 7 5-star recruits just from the state of Washington. If you look at all the 5-star, you know, Sam, Savelle, the two guys we didn't get, there's Connerly this year. Then there's Connerly this year. There's Jaden Wayne. I don't know if that's 6 or 7. That might be 7. But, yeah, I mean, we could it, – it's just the amount of talent that we're losing. I mean, that's like a roster with 7 5-star guys. You know, it's like you said, we could have a generational quarterback. We don't have fucking time to you have a generational quarterback, you've got to get top-notch coaching.
Are you referring to Mecca and JTT?
All right, well, let's a couple more minutes. Let's wrap this up. All right. We've already talked about it. How do we prevent another 2004 to 2009 that appears to be looming? You got to fire the coach.
Yeah.
How worried are you about players hitting the portal at the end of the season? I think in any scenario, like, even if you were to hire Urban Meyer, which would never happen, just if you were to hire, you know, insert big time coach, you would still lose some guys to the portal.
Yeah.
You know, my scenario of begging Coach Pete to come, I think even if he comes back, you know, you might lose a few guys to the portal just because it's, you know, that's just the way it is.
Yeah, I mean, we've covered this.
But we need to prevent a wholesale. You know, you can't lose Smalls, Heward, McMillan, Odunze, you know, a couple of the morale, a couple guys on the D line. Like, you can't lose all the young talent that are going to be pros. You know, Covington. You can't lose all those guys. I mean, that's a big issue, Jimmy, because that talent is going to prevent, you know, the next coach from, you know, from this being a 2004 to 2009. But if you keep Jimmy Lake around,
there would be a few guys
that you're going to lose a lot of talent. Yeah. And then the next coach is going to be dealing with a major rebuild. Okay. Dream head coach targets this offseason if you were AD. Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about that later. Predict the most idiotic press conference statement by Jimmy the rest of the year. Predict the most idiotic press conference statement by Jimmy the rest of the year. I think I don't know what he's going to say, but I think if we lose to Arizona,
next question, then
the most idiotic statement will probably come in that press conference.
I don't know. Say that again.
All right, so here's, before we do UCLA prediction, here's some stats.
Well, yeah, we scored more points in the prior 2 weeks of
number two in yards,
and so we mission accomplished there.
Number one in, I think that's rush D and yards per carry. Their rush offense is actually, it's number six in yards per carry. So I guess, yeah, their rush, Oregon State's rush offense is actually
shocked.
Statistically,
you know, we knew they were a good
better
team
than UCLA's. UCLA pass.
We're going into the
they're number nine in yards per play on defense.
And, you know, just didn't get it done.
UCLA's weakness is their pass.
It's going to have some
zingers. It's really bad.
Sure.
So that's the opportunity.
It'll even surprise us.
And look, if you look at the stats, I mean, Jalen McMillan, Bynum, Odunze, you know, Cade Otton is back. I mean, there is no excuse for us not to have a good passing offense. So, if they want to get it turned around on offense, they have to figure something out. And, you know, because if they figure it out, they should be able to move the ball through the air. And look, if we win this game, I'm not saying we are, but 2-1 in conference, beat Arizona, you're 3-1 in conference, and ZTF, maybe he comes. I'm just saying, you can actually, there's something you can.
I will be back.
I want whatever the players want. I mean, I want what's best for the players. So I hope they get a win so they'll feel better.
Okay, and so, yeah, okay, they get to 5 or 6 wins, and Jimmy gets a chance because they showed some improvement, just what we want. Look, buddy, I've told you this story before. I'm not going to get into details, but, you know, there's been some teams that have been on the cusp, right, of that sixth coveted win for the bowl game, and players are like, I don't want that sixth win.
Right.
I don't want the extra practices. I don't want the bowl game.
Well, that's question. I don't think they want
with,
that. But
I want,
I mean, I
to
could
be
wrong.
Done. That's the other thing.
Anyway,
too, right?
Brother, I know you have,
I mean,
to go. But
yeah,
like
Dick
Barrett
always talks about
go number
the 10
two,
extra
like
practices
really
in the bowl game and how important that was to Don
James. You got a
James
prediction for
the,
UCLA.
You know, the next year of the program, getting those coveted practices with the young guys. It's like, okay, sure, that might be what the coaches and fans want, but do the players want it? If you're shitty or mediocre, you want to be done.
Yeah,
as
I'm
going to
go with
–
I'm going to go with
so,
31
yeah, I
to 17.
Agree. I want what's best
think,
for the players. Like,
look, this is a game where
Jimmy. I mean,
they're going to hammer us on the ground. They have better. They have. And I just think visually, I'm more
know,
scared
man.
Of their run Unless game than locker. I was of Oregon State. And you know, defensively, we got to figure it out. We got to make adjustments to stop the run and let the corner leave the corners on an island. And also DTR, their quarterback, he's really
19,
he's hit or miss, Jekyll and Hyde. But the problem is he's a good running quarterback.
UCLA wins.
So he's going to get some yards on the ground. So I think I said 31-17 for me. What about you? Okay, we got to leave it there because I gotta head to the John. But thanks everybody. Really appreciate it. Go Dogs. We'll talk to you next week.
Yeah. Yeah. That's correct. And that's I said 27-19. Go, yeah, just don't tell all the listeners. We can just wrap it up. Audience. Yeah. Mm-hmm.